Chapter 23. Poultry on Parade. That spring, we decided to try our hand at animal husbandry. We own 2 acres in the country now. It only seemed right to share it with a farm animal or two. Besides, I was editor of Organic Gardening, a magazine that had long celebrated the incorporation of animals and their manure into a healthy, well-balanced garden. In the end, we settled on poultry. For any gardener who had sworn off chemical pesticides and fertilizers, chickens made a lot of sense. They were inexpensive and relatively low maintenance. They needed only a small coop and a few cups of cracked corn each morning to be happy. Not only did they provide fresh eggs, but when let loose to roam, they spent their days studiously scouring the property, eating bugs and grubs, devouring ticks, scratching up the soil like efficient little rototillers, and fertilizing with their high nitrogen droppings as they went. Jenny had become friendly with a mom from school who lived on a farm and said she'd be happy to give us some chicks from the next clutch of eggs to hatch. Just one word of warning, another neighbor who raised chickens for eggs and meat advised. Whatever you do, don't let the kids name them. Once you name them, they're no longer poultry, they're pets. Right, I said. Chicken farming, I knew, had no room for sentimentality. Hens could live 15 years or more, but only produced eggs in their first couple of years. When they stopped laying, it was time for the stewing pot. That was just part of managing a flock. The next evening, I pulled into the driveway from work, and the 3 kids raced out of the house to greet me, each cradling a newborn chick. Jenny was behind them with a 4th in her hands. Donna had brought the baby birds over that afternoon. They were barely a day old and peered up at me with cocked heads as if to ask, "Are you my mama?" Patrick was the first to break the news. "I named mine Feathers." "Mine is Tweety," said Connor. "My Wicka Wuffy," Colleen chimed in. I shot Jenny a quizzical look. "Fluffy," she said. "She named her chicken Fluffy." "Jenny," I protested, "what did we decide? These are farm animals, not pets." "Oh, get real, Farmer John," she said. "You know as well as I do that you can never hurt one of these. Just look at how cute they are." "Jenny," I said, the frustration rising in my voice. "By the way," she said, holding up the 4th chick in her hands, "meet Shirley." Several weeks after we brought the birds home, something jolted me awake before dawn. I sat up in bed and listened. From downstairs came a weak, sickly call. It was croaky and hoarse, more like a tubercular cough than a proclamation of dominance. It sounded again, "Cock-a-doodle-doo!" A few seconds ticked past, and then came an equally sickly but distinct reply, "Rick-a-rick-a-roo!" I shook Jenny, and when she opened her eyes, asked, "When Donna brought the chicks over, you did ask her to check to make sure they were hens, right?" "You mean you can do that?" she asked, and rolled back over, sound asleep. As it turned out, Donna had not attempted to sex our 4 chicks, and 3 of our 4 laying hens were males. I had thought the constant crowing of our roosters would drive Marley insane. In his younger years, the sweet chirp of a single tiny songbird in the yard would set him off on a frenetic barking jag as he raced from one window to the next, hopping up and down on his hind legs. 3 crowing roosters a few steps from his food bowl, however, had no effect on him at all. He didn't seem to even know they were there. Each day the crowing grew louder and stronger. Marley slept right through the racket. That's when it first occurred to me that maybe he wasn't just ignoring the crowing. Maybe he couldn't hear it. I walked up behind him one afternoon as he snoozed in the kitchen and said, "Marley?" Nothing. I said it louder. "Marley?" Nothing. I clapped my hands. "Marley!" He lifted his head and looked blankly around, his ears up, trying to figure out what it was his radar had detected. I did it again, clapping loudly and shouting his name. This time, he turned his head enough to catch a glimpse of me standing behind him. "Oh, it's you!" He bounced up, tail wagging, happy and clearly surprised to see me. My dog, it seemed, was going deaf. It all made sense. In recent months, Marley seemed to simply ignore me in a way he never had before. I would call for him, and he would not so much as glance my way. I would take him outside before turning in for the night, and he would sniff his way across the yard, oblivious to my whistles and calls to get him to turn back. He would be asleep at my feet in the family room when someone would ring the doorbell, and he would not so much as open an eye. Not that he seemed to mind. Retirement suited Marley just fine, and his hearing problems didn't seem to impinge on his leisurely country lifestyle. If anything, deafness proved fortuitous for him, finally giving him a doctor-certified excuse for disobeying. After all, how could he heed a command that he could not hear? As thick-skulled as I always insisted he was, I swear he figured out how to use his deafness to his advantage. Yell for him to come when he had somewhere else he'd rather be going, and he'd stroll blithely away from you, not even glancing guiltily over his shoulder, as he once would have. But drop a piece of steak into his bowl, and he would come trotting in from the next room. He still had the ability to detect the dull, satisfying thud of meat on metal. Marley went through life insatiably hungry. Not only did we give him 4 big scoops of dog chow a day, enough food to sustain an entire family of chihuahuas for a week, but we began freely supplementing his diet with table scraps, against the better advice of every dog guide we had ever read. Table scraps, we knew, simply programmed dogs to prefer human food to dog chow. And given the choice between a half-eaten hamburger and dry kibble, who could blame them? Table scraps were a recipe for canine obesity, but not in our dog. Marley had many problems, but obesity was not among them. He was like a high-kilowatt electric plant that instantly converted every ounce of available fuel into pure, raw power. Marley was an amazing physical specimen, the kind of dog passersby stopped to admire. He was huge for a Labrador Retriever. 97 pounds of rippled, sinewy brawn with nary an ounce of fat anywhere on him. Each evening after we finished dinner, when it came time to give Marley his meal, I would fill his bowl with chow and then freely toss in any tasty leftovers or scraps I could find. With 3 young children at the table, half-eaten food was something we had in plentiful supply. The only foods we kept from him were those we knew to be unhealthy for dogs. Larding Marley's meals with scraps that would otherwise be thrown out made me feel thrifty, waste not, want not, and charitable. When Marley wasn't acting as our household garbage disposal, he was on duty as the family's emergency spill response team. No mess was too big a job for our dog. One of the kids would flip a full bowl of spaghetti and meatballs on the floor, and we'd simply whistle and stand back while old Wetvac sucked up every last noodle and then licked the floor until it gleamed. Errant peas, dropped celery, runaway rigatoni, spilled applesauce, it didn't matter what it was. If it hit the floor, it was history. To the amazement of our friends, he even woofed down salad greens. One day, I arrived home from work to find the house empty. Jenny and the kids were out somewhere, and I called for Marley but got no response. I found him in the kitchen, his back to me. He was standing on his hind legs, his front paws and chest resting on the kitchen table as he gobbled down the remains of a grilled cheese sandwich. My first reaction was to loudly scold him. Instead, I decided to see how close I could get before he realized he had company. I tiptoed up behind him until I was close enough to touch him. As he chewed the crust, he kept glancing at the door that led into the garage, knowing that that was where Jenny and the kids would enter upon their return. The instant the door opened, he would be on the floor under the table, feigning sleep. Apparently, it had not occurred to him The dad might sneak in through the front door. "Oh, Marley," I asked in a normal voice, "what do you think you're doing?" His tail was wagging languidly, a sign he thought he was alone and getting away with a major food heist. Clearly, he was pleased with himself. I cleared my throat loudly, and he still didn't hear me. I made kissy noises with my mouth. Nothing. He polished off one sandwich, nosed the plate out of the way, and stretched forward to reach the crust left on a second plate. I snapped my fingers twice, and he froze mid-bite, staring at the back door. What was that? Did I hear a car door slam? After a moment, he convinced himself it was nothing, and went back to his purloined snack. That's when I reached out and tapped him once on the butt. I might as well have lit a stick of dynamite. The old dog nearly jumped out of his fur coat. He rocketed backward off the table, and as soon as he saw me, dropped onto the floor, rolling over to expose his belly to me in surrender. Busted! You are so busted! But I didn't have it in me to scold him. He was old. He was deaf. He was beyond reform. Now, as he lay at my feet begging for forgiveness, I just found it a little sad. I guess secretly I had hoped he'd been faking all along. I built a chicken coop, an A-frame plywood affair with a drawbridge-style gangplank that could be raised at night to keep out predators. Donna kindly took back two of our three roosters and exchanged them for hens from her flock. We now had three girls and one testosterone-pumped guy bird that spent every waking minute doing one of three things: pursuing sex, having sex, or crowing boastfully about the sex he had just scored. Jenny observed that roosters are what men would be if left to their own devices, with no social conventions to rein in their baser instincts. And I couldn't disagree. I had to admit, I kind of admired the lucky bastard. We let the chickens out each morning to roam the yard, and Marley made a few gallant runs at them, charging ahead, barking for a few dozen paces or so, before losing steam and giving up. It was as though some genetic coding deep inside him was sending an urgent message. You're a retriever. They are birds. Don't you think it might be a good idea to chase them? He just did not have his heart in it. Soon the birds learned the lumbering yellow beast was no threat whatsoever, more a minor annoyance than anything else, and Marley learned to share the yard with these new feathered interlopers. One day I looked up from weeding in the garden to see Marley and the four chickens making their way down the road toward me as if in formation, the birds pecking and Marley sniffing as they went. It was like old friends out for a Sunday stroll. What kind of a self-respecting hunting dog are you? I chastised him. Marley lifted his leg and peed on a tomato plant before hurrying to rejoin his new pals.